2 Samuel 11, verse 1. And it came to pass, after the year is expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle. See, I'm not making that up. It's time. There's a set time of the year where we go fight. You know, Saturday night's all right for fighting. So, when kings are going to go forth to battle, actually it's springtime. You know, you got to complete your unfinished business. So David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon. And they besieged Rabbah. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. Now, this event is not recorded in the book of Chronicles. It's only recorded in the book of 2 Samuel from man's viewpoint. Rabbah was the capital of Ammon, known today as Amman, Jordan. 11:2, and it came to pass in the evening tide, late in the afternoon, that David arose from off his bed, you know, the midnight rest. It gets really hot in Israel at this time, and to avoid the heat, people would take a siesta, and walked upon the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing herself. And the woman was beautiful to look upon. She was a woman of rare beauty, is how one translation goes. It was normal to lounge on your rooftop after you napped to enjoy the cooler air. This is before air conditioning had been invented. Verse 3, and David sent and inquired after the woman, and one said, is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Aye, Eliam was Ahithophel, who was David's counselor's son. So David's counselor, this is Eliam, you know, the daughter of Eliam. So we're talking granddaughter. 11:4. And David sent messengers and took her, and she came unto him, and he lay with her. For she was purified from her uncleanness. She had been done using her tampons. And she returned unto her house. She's more careful with the ceremonial law than the moral law, though. And the woman conceived. And sent and told David, said, surprise! I'm with child. And David sent to Joab and said, send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent Uriah to David, and when Uriah was come unto him, David demanded of him, how's Joab doing as head of the army? How are the people there doing? How's the war prospering? Remember, Uriah was a mighty warrior. He understood battlefield engagements. He was not a lightweight. Verse 8, and David said to Uriah, go down to your house, wash your feet, you know, relax, enjoy yourself. Here, have a Cuban cigar. And Uriah departed out of the king's house, and there followed him a mess of meat from the king. Here, here's a whole bunch of food. Take a bunch of food home with you. Plan A, cover over quietly by having Uriah go home and sleep with his wife. 2 Samuel 11:9. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants, you know, the attendants, the bodyguards of the Lord. They went not down to his house. When they had told David, saying, Uriah didn't go home last night, David got Uriah again and said, comest thou not from thy journey? Why then didst thou not go down unto thy house? And Uriah said unto David, the ark, Israel, Judah, they're in tents. My lord Joab, the servants of my lord, were encamped in the open fields. Shall I then go into my house and eat and drink and lie with my wife? As thou livest and as thy soul liveth, I will not do this thing. You can see why he was one of the mighty men. He's an honorable warrior. He was genuinely concerned about the welfare of his nation. One can understand how he ended up with such a beautiful woman. 11:12. And David said to Uriah, all right, hang around here today. Tomorrow, I'll let you go home. I'll let you go back. So Uriah abode in Jerusalem that day and tomorrow. And when David had called him, he did eat and drink before him, and David made him drunk. Oh, have another drink. And at even, he went out to lie in his bed with the servants of his Lord, and he didn't go back to his house. Darn, plan B, get him drunk. Maybe that will influence him to go to his wife. Because somehow something happens to guys' minds if they have a few drinks. 2 Samuel 11:14. And it came to pass in the morning
that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. David had Uriah deliver his own death sentence to Joab. And he wrote in the letter and said, "Set you Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle. Retire from him that he may be smitten and die." Plan C. Put him in the front lines where the fight's the fiercest, then withdraw from him, allowing him to die in battle. No one would know except Joab. Joab does not question the order. He might have been wondering why David had sent for Uriah in the first place. 11:16. And it came to pass, when Joab observed the city, that he assigned Uriah into a place which he knew that where the valiant men were. So Uriah was assigned the area where the strongest and most equipped opposing troops were. This is where you usually send the movie extras. You know, those who, you know, anytime in Star Trek they'd send an extra person and knew that guy was going to die. You know, so this is where you send those guys usually. But this is a main character here. Verse 17. And the men of the city went out, and they fought with Joab. They attacked Joab, and there fell some of the people of the servants of David, and Uriah the Hittite died also. Look, there were many war casualties that day. Not only Uriah, many died in battle at David's bequest. Joab altered his battle strategies to allow them to die while fighting. Joab also gains a political favor card he can utilize when necessary. He deliberately set up a situation where not just one, but many of the children of Israel died. 11:18. And Joab sent and told David all the things concerning the war, and charged the messenger, saying, "When thou hast made an end of telling the matters of the war unto the king, and if so be that the king's wrath arise, and he say unto thee, Wherefore approach ye so near to the city when you did fight? Don't you know that they're going to shoot from the wall? Who smote Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal-shet?" Basically, it's Jerubbaal or Gideon. "Did not a woman cast a piece of a millstone upon him from the wall that he died in Thebez? Why went you near the wall? Then say thou, thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also." David had been a general. He had fought in many battles. He knew military tactics well. He would know that this was not how you approached a walled city, and so would others. The record of Abimelech, who was Gideon's son, who had had his 70 brothers murdered, died this way in battle. This was one of the battle tactics you studied at war college. That happened in Judges 9. You know, you don't get too close to the wall because they said that he was going to, you know, die by a woman, and basically she threw a part of stone off, and something called gravity, and it came down and hit him in the head and killed him. So everybody knows you know, that's not how you fight battles. 2 Samuel 11:22. So the messenger went and came and showed David all that Joab had sent him for. And the messenger said unto David, "Surely the men prevailed against us and came out unto us into the field, and we were upon them even unto the entering of the gate. And the shooter shot from off the wall upon thy servants, and some of the king's servants be dead, and thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also." Then David said unto his messenger, "Thus shalt thou say unto Joab, let not this thing displease thee, for the sword devours one as well as another." Boy, you talk about having a spin doctor here. "Make thy battle more strong against the city, and overthrow it, and encourage thou him." And when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she mourned for her husband. When the mourning was past, David sent and fetched her to his house, and she became his wife and bare him a son. But, pause, effect, but the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. There was indecent haste to this marriage. The whole episode is dastardly, but is it unforgivable by God? Certain knowledgeable people will not forget or forgive. So how will the Lord handle it? 12:1. And the Lord sent Nathan unto David. And it came unto him and said unto him, there were two men in one city, a rich man and a poor one. You know, Jesus isn't the only one who talked in parables. The rich man had an exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, one little she lamb. That's all she had. which he had bought and nourished up, and he grew up together with him and with his children. It did eat of his own meat, drank of his own cup, and lay in his bosom, was unto him as a daughter. And there came a traveler unto the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was come unto him, but took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was come to him. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. He said to Nathan, "As the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die." Bingo! Entrapment! Gotcha! "And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity. He showed no compassion." And Nathan looked David in the eye and said, "Thou art the man." Thank you. I got 3 exclamation points. "Thou art the man." And then he follows up with, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel." The prophet speaks on behalf of God. He declares what God thinks about this matter. "I anointed thee king over Israel. I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul. I gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wife into thy bosom. Gave thee unto the house of Israel and of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have moreover have given unto thee such and such things." In other words, whatever you ask, I'm willing to give you. "Wherefore hast thou defiled this commandment? Why have you defiled the word of the Lord to do evil in his sight? Thou hast killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword, and hast taken his wife to be thy wife, and hast slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon." Man, how did Nathan find this out? Nathan must have listening devices somewhere. Yeah, it's called God. Called revelation. The consequences of David's actions were now revealed. According to Old Testament law, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, life for a life. That's what he should have gotten right here. 12:10. "Now therefore, the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thy own house. And I will take thy wives before thy eyes and give them unto thy neighbor. And he shall lie with thy wives in the light of the sun. For thou didst secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun." And David said unto Nathan, "I didn't do any of that." No, he didn't. "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said unto David, "The Lord also hath put away thy sin, thou shalt not die." Well, that's a relief, because that's what should have happened. David would not die, even though that was the penalty for his actions according to the law. He didn't tell Nathan to keep quiet about it, though, or cover it up. He acknowledged that he had acted wrongly, and he asked for forgiveness from his heart. 2 Samuel 12:14. Howbeit because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme. The child also that is born unto thee shall surely die. This is a great lesson for us today. Do not give occasion or be a stumbling block to your brethren or enemies. Matthew, could you read Romans 14:13 for us, please? It's in your syllabi.
"Let us not, therefore, judge one another anymore, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way."
That's right. Lizzie, if you could read 1 Corinthians 8:9.
"But take heed lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak."
The ungodly, the wicked, are always looking for an occasion, a reason to attack men and women who stand for the true God. Edgar, could you read Daniel 6 for us, please?
"Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God."
Let's consider the extra insight into the heart of David by reading 2 Psalms. There is no record of King Saul reaching out to God for forgiveness in the way David's going to reach out. So Jack, if you could read Psalm 32 for us. It's a reflective poem.
happy or fortunate is the man whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is pardoned. Happy or fortunate is the man unto whom the Lord does not ascribe guilt, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. His spirit has made full confession. When I declare not my sin, my bones wasted away through my groaning all the day long. So long as I refused to own my guilt, I moaned unceasingly. Life ebbed away. For your punishment lay heavily upon me. My strength dried up as by the heat of summer. Selah. I acknowledge my sin unto you, and my guilt have I not hid. I said, I will confess my fault unto the Lord, and you have pardoned my sin. Selah. Your forgiveness shall every one that is godly pray unto you in a time when you can be reached. Even if the floods of great waters come rushing down, they shall not come near unto him. You are my haven of refuge. You shall preserve me from distress, from the adversary. You shall surround me with the songs of deliverance. Selah. I will instruct you and teach you in the way which you shall go. I will guide, counsel you with mine eye upon you. Do not be like the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose mouth must be held in with a bit and bridle, else they will not obey you. The torrents of the wicked are many, but he that trusts in the Lord, mercy shall embrace him on every side. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous, and shout for joy, all ye that are upright in heart.
Good. And in Psalm 51, this is another psalm of David, when Nathan the prophet came unto him after he had gone to Bathsheba. So Mary, would you read Psalm 51 for us, please?
Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness. According unto the multitude of your tender mercies, obliterate my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against you only, have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, so that you are justified when you pronounce sentence and blameless in your judgment. Behold, in a sinful state I was born. Yes, from the moment my mother conceived me. Behold, you desire truth in the inner self, and you made me to understand hidden wisdom. Cleanse me with hyssop, used in purification rites of lepers, until I am clean. Wash me until I am whiter than snow. Fill me with joy and gladness, that the life you have crushed may thrill with joy again. Hide your face from my sins, and wipe out all my guilt. Produce in me a purified heart, O God. Fill with clean thoughts and right desires. Banish me not away from thy presence, and take not your Holy Spirit from me. O give the comfort of your help again, and establish me with your willing spirit. Then will I teach transgressors your ways, and sinners shall return unto you. Deliver me from the guilt of murder, O God. You are the God of my salvation, and my tongue shall sing aloud of your righteousness. O Lord, open thou my lips, and my mouth shall flow forth your praise. For you desire not sacrifice, else would I give it, and thou delights not in burnt offerings. The sacrifices of God are a shattered spirit, a broken and a sorrowing heart, O God. You will not put me away from you. Show good in your good pleasure unto Zion. Build you the walls of Jerusalem. Then shall you delight in the right sacrifices, with burnt offering and whole burnt offering. Then shall they offer bullocks unto thine altar.
Good. Yeah, those are some great insights. Don't take that spirit from me, God, please. 2 Samuel 12:15, and Nathan departed unto his house. And the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bare unto David, and it was very sick. David therefore besought God for the child, and David fasted and went and lay all night upon the earth. And the elders of his house arose and went to him to raise him from off the earth, but he would not, neither did he eat bread with them. And it came to pass on the seventh day that the child died. And the servants of David feared to tell him that the child was dead. For they said, "Behold, while the child was yet alive, we spake unto him, and he would not hearken unto our voice. How will he then vex himself if we tell him that the child is dead?" Well, when David, who's no dummy, saw that his servants whispered, David perceived the child was dead. Therefore David said unto his servants, "Is the child dead?" And they said, "He is dead." Then David arose from the earth and washed and anointed himself and changed his apparel. And where's the first thing he does? He goes right to the house of the Lord. And he worships God. And then he came to his own house, and when he required, they set bread before him, and he did eat. The first place David goes is straight to the Lord's house to talk to and worship God. He went with boldness, showing no fear, because he believed and understood that God had forgiven him. You sure didn't see Saul do that. All right, 12:21. Then said his servants unto him, "What thing is this that thou hast done? Thou did fast and weep for the child while he was alive. When the child was dead, you rose up and you ate food." He said, "Well, while the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether God would be gracious to me, that the child may live? But now he is dead. Wherefore shall I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me." And David comforted Bathsheba his wife, and went in unto her, and lay with her, and she bare a son, and he called his name Solomon, for the Lord loved him. And he got sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet, and God called his name Jedidiah, because of the Lord. All right, God called the child Jedidiah, which means beloved of Yah. Solomon means peaceable. Now, Solomon is the fourth living child of David with Bathsheba. The thought content is finished before moving on to another record. Children are not always listed chronologically. If you go look at the family lineage on page 81 of Appendix B, you'll see it's not like that, that as soon as the child died, Bathsheba came in and they had a baby right away. They had three other children, and finally they had Solomon down the list, so over a number of years. But Solomon's the most important of those children. So, like I said, you can look at page 81 in your syllabus and you can see the list of the children. Meanwhile, the war with Ammon over the royal city Rabbath was continuing to rage. The scene, you know, fades out and re-shows up again at Rabbath, where they're entrenched in war and they're about to take the city. 2 Samuel 12:26. And Joab fought against Rabbath and the children of Ammon, and he took the capital city. And Joab sent messengers to David and said, "I have fought against Rabbath and have taken the city of waters," or the waters of the city, the wells, the water supply. Once you get the water supply, you got the gun, you got the, you know. "Now therefore, gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take this city and it's called after my name." David gathered all the people together and went to Rabbath and fought against it and took it. So David goes back to the business of being a king. When he was having military success under Saul, remember the people praised him, not Saul. That potential could have been there with Joab, where they would have praised Joab. And you know, I think David could have used the public relations boost about now. Also. All right, 2 Samuel 12:30. "And he took their king's crown, the crown of Milcom, from off of his head, the weight whereof was a talent of gold." All right, 50 to 60 shekels make up a talent, about 30 kilograms. So that's a big crown, with the precious stones. "And it was set on David's head, and he brought forth the spoil of the city in great abundance. And he brought forth the people that were therein and put them under saws." You know, he put them into magician tricks and cut them in half. No, that's not what I'm talking about. "He put them under saws and under harrows of iron and under axes of iron and made them pass through the brick kiln. And thus did he unto all the cities of the children of Ammon." And so David and all the people returned unto Jerusalem. All right, in your syllabus, Israel put the captured people to labor, working with saws, iron picks, and axes. They made them work as brick making. The brick kiln was not, it's an oven, but that's probably not what it was referring to here. It was probably the bricked paved areas. because they sun-dried their bricks rather than wasting wood, which was scarce, drying them with fire. So he didn't make, you know, have them all go through the oven, the brick kiln. You know, it, the whole brick area was a specific area where he had them go through, and then they handed them picks, saws, axes, and said, hey, you get to rebuild these walls, or whatever they needed done. 1 Chronicles 20, verse 4, should be in your syllabus. And it came to pass after this, that there arose war at Gezer with the Philistines, at which time Sibiachah the Hushanite slew Sapan, that was of the children of the giant, and they were subdued. And there was war again with the Philistines. What did we read from Nathan? There's going to be war in the kingdom. Guess what? War, 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 war. There was war with the Philistines, and Elhanan the son of Jael slew Lami, the brother of Goliath the Gittite, whose spear staff was like a weaver's balm. Oh, Goliath has got siblings, and they're fighting him. And so they had to take him out. And yet again, there's war in Gath. And there was a man of great stature. He was so big that his fingers and toes were 24. He had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. And he was the son of a giant. And he played defensive tackle for the Browns. Right. But when he defiled Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, slew him. There were born unto the giant in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. 13, back to 2 Samuel 13 now. And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister, whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin. And Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. Now, Amnon rapes Tamar's half-sister and then sends her away. 13:11. When she had, basically, him and his buddies can, you know, fix it. Hey, I'm sick. Can you bring me, have my sister bring me food? That was the ploy. And when she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, come, lie with me, my sister. And she answered, no, you idiot. No, my brother, don't force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? And as for thee, thou shalt be one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, speak unto the king, and he will not withhold me from thee. Howbeit, he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, because he knew he was going to look like the fool. So that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. All right, his hormones, you know, and Amnon said unto her, get out of here. And she said unto him, there is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst send unto me. But he would not hearken unto her. So she goes home, and her brother figures out something is not right. Verse 20. And Absalom her brother said unto her, has Amnon thy brother been with thee? But hold now thy peace, my sister, for he is thy brother. Regard not this thing. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But when King David heard of all these things, he was not real happy with the way his children were behaving. He was very wroth. And Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon, because he had forced his sister Tamar. Then it flashes across the screen, 2 years later. Absalom is going to kill Amnon to avenge his sister, and then he has to flee the country. Chapter 13:37. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ahilud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled, went to Geshur, and he was away for 3 years. And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, saying he was dead. So the guy waited 2 years for the right way, and he was able then to kill his brother, but then he had to escape. So he's 3 years in captivity now. Now, Joab figures out a way to get Absalom back into the country, but David still won't go see Absalom. And Absalom wants to see his father. So what are we going to do here? 2 Samuel 14:23. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him turn to his own house and let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. But in all Israel, there is none so much highly praised as Absalom for his beauty. This is David's son. So, you know, he's doing GQ commercials and, you know. From the sole of his foot, even the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. He was extremely handsome, and he knew it. 2 Samuel 14:26. And when he polled his head, that meant when he cut his hair, for it was at every year's end that he polled it. He cut his hair once a year, because the hair was very heavy on him. Therefore, he polled it. He weighed the hair of his head, and it was at least 200 shekels. So it's 3 to 4 pounds every year when he cut his hair, 3 to 4 pounds worth of hair. I think mine's, what, half an ounce? After the king's weight, or by the royal standard. All right, verse 28. So Absalom dwelt 2 full... I don't know why God adds little things about how much, you know, the guy's hair. You know, this is great. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, and he never once saw the king's face. Therefore, Absalom sent for Joab to have him send to the king. But Joab wouldn't come to him. And then he sent again a second time. Joab still wouldn't come. Therefore, he said to his servants, all right, Joab's field is next to mine. And he's got barley, right? Go set it on fire. I'll get his attention. I'll set his field on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom and said, what are you doing? Well, how come your servants set the field on fire? And Absalom said, behold, I sent unto thee, saying, come hither, that I may send thee to the king, to say, wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face. If there be any iniquity in me, then just let him kill me. Like, you know, if I'm guilty of anything and people haven't forgiven me, just put me to death. So Joab came to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom, and they lived happily ever after. Well, no, not really. All right, chapter 15, verse 1. So they reconciled, but Absalom has got a little bit of ego in him, let's say. 15:1. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. So he stood at the entrance of the city gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy or had a complaint came to the king for judgment or for a decision, that Absalom called unto him and said, oh, what city are you? And he said, thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, see, thy matters are good and right. And he said, look, your claims are valid and proper, but there's no representative debated of the king to hear you. Absalom said moreover, oh, if I was appointed judge in the land, if they made me in charge of the land, every man which hath any complaint or any problem, any case, any cause, just might come unto me, and I would make sure he got justice. And it was so that when any man came near to him to do him obeisance, you know, to bow down before him for respect, he would put forth his hand and take him and kiss him. And on this manner did Absalom do to all of Israel. All 12 tribes that came to the king for judgment or justice, Absalom. So Absalom stole the hearts. He stole the loyalty of the men of Israel. He intercepted them at the gate. Said, oh, if I was king, I could do a better job. I'd make sure you got justice. And you're, you know, I understand your complaint. You poor soul. And he just won their hearts from all over the country. And it came to pass after 40 years. That's a long time, so it's not accurate. It's only 4 years. The text is 4 years. And it came to pass after 4 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, for I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. Well, he was born in Hebron. He had friends and family in Hebron. So after 4 years of winning over the hearts of the country, he's about to put his plan into action. For thy servant vowed a vow when I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, if the Lord shall bring me again into Jerusalem, then I will serve or worship the Lord. And the king said, no, that sounds like a great thing. Go in peace. So he rose with the Hebron. But Absalom sent spies, secret messengers with decoder rings, agitators, throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigns as king in Hebron. And Seth Absalom, and with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem. They were called, or they were invited. And they went in their simplicity, you know, quite innocently. And they knew not anything. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't have any privy knowledge of this. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, where he offered sacrifices during the coronation. And the conspiracy was strong. It had gained strength. For the people increased continually with Absalom. And there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after. They're with Absalom. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise, we need to get out of here. Let us flee. For we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart. We have to leave immediately. Leave everything in the microwave. Let's go. Lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. See, David chose not to stay in the city to fight in order to spare the people the collateral damage that was sure to occur. I mean, in Transformers, they just destroyed Chicago. You know, they just went in. There's all this collateral damage there. So that's what David was trying to avoid, all this collateral damage. If we stay in the city and fight here, oh, there's going to be lots of problems. So we'll run and get off and fight in the fields or in the woods or something. Again, you see the insight into David's heart, trying to take care of the people. All right, 2 Samuel 15:15. And the king's servants said unto the king, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king shall appoint. And the king went forth, and all of his household after him. And the king left 10 women who were concubines to keep the palace. Left 10 of them behind to maintain the place while they ran for their life. All right, you've got Psalm 3, the Psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. This is insight into what was going on in his mind. So, Lindell, could you please read us Psalm 3?
Lord, how have my enemies multiplied? More and more are rebelling against me. Many are saying about me, his God cannot save him now, Selah. But you, O Lord, are my protector, my glory, the sustainer of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy mount, Selah. I laid down and wept.
I slept.
I awoke, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me on all sides. Arise, O Lord, deliver me, O my God, for you have smitten all mine enemies with a jawbone across the face. You have broken the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs unto the Lord. Your blessing is upon you, people.
Selah, it means consider what I say. That every time you read that, it's an extra consider what I say. You know, and it's utilized three times here in this psalm. I love the figurative part, you know. You have smitten all my enemies with a jawbone across the face. You've broken the teeth of the wicked. Yeah, get them, God. All right, 2 Samuel 15:17. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and he tarried in a place that was far off. And all his servants passed down beside him, and all the Cherethes, and all the Pelethes, and all the Gittites, 600 men which came after him from Gath. They marched on before the king. Remember, these were David's personal bodyguards, David's elite special forces, as loyal people from his kingdom come to David, though. Now, David's starting to run, and different loyal people are going to come. David's going to handle each one individually. He knows what function each of them has and what their best options to help are. 2 Samuel 15:19. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite. I believe he's a cousin to Ahab the Arab. Ittai the Gittite. Wherefore, goest thou also with us? No, return to thy place and abide with the king. For you're a foreigner, you're a stranger, you're a foreigner, and you're also an exile. You're an exile from your own homeland. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down, you know, to wander about with us? Seeing I go whither I may, you know, I don't even know where I'm going yet. return, Etaitegetai, and take back thy brother, and mercy and truth be with you. You know, may kindness and faithfulness be with you. And Ittai answered the king and says, the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even they also will thy servant be. David said to Ittai, all right, march on, come on, we got room for you. You know, hop on the bandwagon. And Ittai the Gittite passed over with all his men and all the little ones. In other words, he had their families with them. They all came, and all the country wept with a loud voice. You know, the whole countryside wept aloud, and all the people passed by. The king also himself crossed over the brook Kindron, you know, through the Kindron Valley. And all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. And lo, Zadok also, and all the Levites were with him, and they were carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar went up unto all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said to Zadok, carry back the Ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. You know, I'll be glad to go back to its dwelling place again. But if he thus says, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seeth good unto him. He knew his fate was in God's hands. So the king said also unto Zadok the priest, art not thou a seer? Return into the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimez thy son and Jonathan the son of Abiathar. Remember, a seer was a prophet who received revelation and visions. Samuel was referred to as a seer in 1 Chronicles 9:22, and also here. Lizzie, could you read 1 Samuel 9:9 for us?
1 Samuel? Oh, okay. Yeah. Before time in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, thus he spake, come and let us go to this seer, for he that is now called a prophet was before time was called a seer.
Right. So, all right. 15:28. And he's telling these guys, look, you wait in the plain of the wilderness. I'm going to wait in the, you know, he's basically saying, I'm going to wait in the fords in the desert until there come word from you to inform me as what's going on. So Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar, they carried the Ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet. If you go through the Kindron Valley, you hit the Mount of Olives. Many interesting things happen on the Mount of Olives another 1,000 years later. So they're up, going up the Mount of Olives, and he weeps as he went up. And he had his head covered, and he went barefoot like a hobbit. And all the people that were with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Psalm 41:9, Sherry.
Yea, mine own familiar friend in whom I trusted, which did eat of my bread, hath lifted up his heel against me.
This is David's counselor. This guy was locked in spiritually with receiving revelation from God. This quote here, Jesus also quotes this psalm and uses it pertaining to Judas, but it was originally referring to Ahithophel. John 13:18, Sherry.
I speak not of you all. I know whom I have chosen. But that the scripture may be fulfilled, he that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me.
Yeah. All right. Meanwhile, chapter 15, verse 32. And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount, he worshipped God, and behold, Hushai the Archite, who was David's friend, came to meet him with his, you know, his coat rent. You know, he had his robe torn, and earth upon his head. He was in mourning. Unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. But if you return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant. Then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. And hast thou not there with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priest? Therefore it shall be, that what things soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priest. So David needs well-placed spies. God did not forsake David, even though his mutiny had been prophesied earlier. Right? Remember, Nathan told him because of Bathsheba, this was all going to happen? Well, it's happening. But a number of loyal, God-fearing people are being placed in positions to defeat Absalom. 2 Samuel 15:36. Look, behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them you shall send me everything that you can hear. So Hushan, David's friend, came into the city, and as Absalom was entering into Jerusalem, David's running out one side of Jerusalem. Here comes Absalom with his forces coming into the city. And so Hushan goes back. But he's got the two priests' children, who will be carriers. They don't have carrier pigeons yet. So these guys will bring the message, and this guy will be right there and will counsel against Ahithophel. So all of this is needed. 16:1. And when David was a little past the top of the hill, he'd just gone, you know, a little beyond the summit, Ziba, the servant or the steward of Mephibosheth, who is now 35 years old, met him, with a couple of asses saddled and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins, you know, cakes of raisins, and 100 of summer fruits, you know, fruit cakes that they give at Christmas time. No, cakes of figs. And a bottle, a wineskin of wine. Here, have some wine. Take that with you. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses are for the king's household to ride on. The bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat. And the wine that such as you faint in the wilderness may drink. You know, the wine is for those that become exhausted in the desert. Yeah, exactly. Now, Psalm 63 is a psalm of David that addresses this time frame when he was in the wilderness of Judah. We're not going to read Psalm 63, but it would be good if you want to follow up. Now, 16:3, he's running and people are coming to him with different things. And the king said, where is thy master's son? You know, or it's actually the grandson. And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abides at Jerusalem, for he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me to the kingdom of my grandfathers. The text. Then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertaineth unto Mephibosheth. You know, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is now yours. Remember, this is Mephibosheth, who is Jonathan's son, who was really, really thankful. And this is the guy who is his steward. And the steward shows up, and he's trying to find out, well, where's the kid? I helped him out a lot. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in my sight, O Lord, my king. But he basically didn't want to come, and he says that, you're not a good guy anymore. And when King David came to Bahurim, which is on the east side of the Mount of Olives, behold, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul. He's probably not going to be very happy. Whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And he came forth, and he was cursing still as he came. And he cast stones at David. He's swearing at him and throwing rocks at him. And all the servants of the king of David. You know, he's pelting David and his officials with stones. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. I mean, David's got a secret services with him, you know. And this guy's throwing rocks at him. And thus said Shimei, when he cursed, get out of here, get out, you bloody man, thou man of Belial, you scoundrel, he's calling David, you worthless evil man, the Lord has repaid you for the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned, and the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son, and behold, you are taken in thy mischief. You know, you're going to come to ruin because you're a bloody man. You know, you're a man of blood. Then said Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, unto the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over there, I pray thee, and cut off his head. And the king said, what have I to do with you? You know, what do you and I have in common? You sons of Zeruiah. So let him curse, because the Lord has said unto him, curse David. Who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so? All right, again, Zeruiah was David's older sister, and her three sons were Joab Abishai, and Azahel. And you got Appendix A to acquaint yourself with who these people were. And David said to Abishai and all his servants, "Behold my son, which came forth of my bowels. He seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjaminite do it?" I mean, come on, this guy's just a fool, obviously. "Let him alone. Let him curse. For the Lord hath bidden him." You know, the Lord told him to do it. "It may be that the Lord will look on my affliction, that the Lord's going to see my distress, and that the Lord will repay me good for this cursing this day." And as David and his men went by the way, Shimei went along on the hillside over against them and cursed as he went. He kept throwing stones at him and cast dust and showered him with dirt. So this guy didn't, you know, he kept going. As they were walking along the side, he kept throwing things at him and yelling at him. And the king and all the people that were with him came weary. They arrived at their destination exhausted and refreshed themselves there. And Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came into Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with them. And it came to pass when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, was come unto Absalom, that Hushai said unto Absalom, "God save the king! Long live the king!" You know? And Absalom said to Hushai, "Is this thy kindness? Is this the love you show your friend? Who went thou not? How come you didn't go with your friend?" And Hushai said unto Absalom, "Nay, but whom the Lord and this people," you know, whoever God has chosen to be king, "that's who I'm going to honor. That's who I'm going to abide by. That's who I'm going to serve. Should I not serve in the presence of the Son as I have served in the Father's presence? So will I be in thy presence." Then said Absalom to Ahithophel, "Take a break." And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to pick it up right here because this is where it's going to get interesting.